Welcome to Moves That Matter. I'm your host, Dr. Clive Posley, and we're delighted to have you here with us once again. As you know, you've been told before, the price of admission to our show is that you hit the share button. Share with some friends, invite them into the conversation so that they can comment as I teach, and as my guests have opportunities to share, you can interact with my guests. I'm thankful to have you here with us. I appreciate the viewership. I appreciate the comments. When I'm out to eat, various things, people recognize the show. So God bless you, and I truly do appreciate it. I also want to remind you, before we move forward to our next segment, about my book I've written, More Than Icons and Images, Uncovering the Hidden Protest Narrative of the Black American Athlete in the 21st Century. This book sets up a history and argues the history and the value of the history of protest among African-American males as a means of political voice. They've used their platforms as early as Jack Johnson, the boxer, on throughout history, moving down through to Tommy Smith and John Carlos. And even in our era, we know today that LeBron James has used his platform. We know that Colin Kaepernick has used his platform. Chris Jackson used his platform. And so this book discusses that. It's a good read for you. You can get the book at Amazon.com. You can get the book on my website, drclivepolsley.com. Whatever the case, and you can also get it as an e-read book. And you can listen to it as an audio book. Whatever the case, take advantage of this opportunity where I engage with you, and I'm working on the second edition for that book, so it'll be coming soon. Listen, we have a special treat for you today. I have a couple of special guests with me to further discuss the topic of how and why racism still works, seven reasons why racism still works in America. You do not want to miss this. Put your thinking caps on. Please come back after this brief break, and you will be blessed. I'll see you in just a second. Hi, and we're back. Thank you for your participation today. We're going to get right into this topic I've been discussing for the last few weeks, seven reasons why racism still works in America. I have with me today a longtime friend, consistent guest on our show, and his name is Mr. Eric Simmons. He's a voice in our community, and he's serious about the plight of African-American males in particular, and its effect and racism's effect on the African-American male, and various other topics that he's become fluid about and has some powerful truths and solutions that can help us. He has with him a guest today that we want to welcome, but I'm going to have Mr. Simmons to introduce him. Mr. Simmons, how are you today?
I'm well, sir, and yourself?
I'm blessed, my brother.
Hey, delighted to be here again.
Glad to have you.
Always wonderful to have a space to share with you in terms of trying to get our folks where they need to be.
Absolutely.
Today we have a special guest. His name is Mr. Jeffrey Cottrell. I've known Mr. Cottrell for about 15 years, and he's a freedom fighter.
All right.
He's a brother out here trying to do what's right to uplift the community, and while doing that, he's praising the Lord as well. So I'll let Mr. Cottrell speak to himself on a couple of minutes.
First of all, Mr. Simmons, thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome.
I've been blazing this trail for a long time now, and also to you, Doc. Thanks for having me on your show.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
You know, you spoke on a situation or the topic about does racism still exist?
Mm-hmm. And work in America.
And I believe one of the biggest entities that helps sustain that notion is the educational system.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
Absolutely.
And one of the reasons why is because they have a thing called SPED, special education. And if those are not familiar with SPED, SPED is a program where they have determined that a young man needs an IEP, an individual education plan.
Okay.
And so this plan is brought about through counselors, teachers, parents, other advisors in the school that deal with the special education department.
Okay.
And they come up with this plan and says, this is the letter that we're going to follow in order to help this young man graduate high school.
So they place him in a protocol.
They place him in a protocol.
Okay.
I became familiar with this program because I started as a campus monitor at Arsenal Tech High School.
Okay.
through my work with Mr. Simmons and some of the other people that we dealt with, the new principal thought I would be a great fit for special education to be a SPED inclusion teacher. And so I went from being a campus monitor to a SPED inclusion teacher, which simply meant that I was to be in the classroom to help those ones who deem a SPED student some additional help, some additional time, and also ways to ensure that this young man or young woman would graduate.
Okay.
I guess my shock became that most of my caseload were young black males.
Wow.
And so I often ask the question, how did they get to this point?
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that it started as early in the third grade, that they created IEPs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. However, when you think about that, there's another thing that happens in the third grade through iRead or iLearn.
Mm-hmm.
They determine how many prison beds they're going to build based on the numbers from third grade testing.
Hmm. That's interesting. I was noticed something that Nancy DeVos was cutting dollars to any special ed programs across the country, and so that in that it could be said that that would kind of speed up the second process you talked about, which is the beds.
If
we're cutting funding, if it's necessary, if we're cutting funding to special ed students, we're going to speed up the process of leading them to the prison mass incarceration system.
Yes.
Absolutely, sir. And that's exactly what's going on. Mm. And the reason why you know this is because when you get a young man who is about to graduate, who is 17, and all of a sudden you look at his IEP and you look at his data or his scores, and they're not appropriate, and he is 17, and he's a senior.
Kind of late to do a lot about that.
That's it's right. Kind of late to do a lot about that. And so all of a sudden, they want to grab this IEP that was written 2 years ago.
Mm.
Of course, people change. Young men change. So you see that
as an intentional expression of racism.
Absolutely, because they wanted to make you believe that, oh, we're giving them special attention because we really want them to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you look at the graduation rate of those individuals, they're not very high.
Wow.
Which is what led me to my current job for the city of Indianapolis as one of the Peacekeepers Violent Reduction Team members.
Mr. Simmons, do you see some of what Mr. Cottrell is discussing with us in your line of work, and you work in education?
I do. Absolutely, I see that. I'm in the classroom. I'm dealing with students. I'm dealing with teachers, mm-hmm. evaluating. I see that. And another point Jeff touched on, the teachers that we're bringing into the classrooms, some of them are Caucasian teachers. They don't have the aptitude to deal with these young African-American males.
Mm-hmm.
They come in fresh out of college. A lot of them don't have experience in dealing with kids of color. So body language becomes an issue with them.
Mm.
And our kids, we smell fear. Our children, black children, smell fear. And if they know you're not for them, they can see that. And there comes the behavior issues that we have in the classroom. It's a mess. It's a mess. But what do we do to clean it up? What do we do to clean it up? Like Tupac said, we're not meant to survive because it's a setup. And I believe that wholeheartedly.
Well, one of the things that they've done in the state of Indiana that most people are not familiar with is that 5 years ago, the Honors College at Purdue University
mm-hmm.
took the CASA test, which is the test to let you become a teacher. They all failed. Every single one of them failed the test.
Who is it that took this test? Say
this
that to the audience again.
The Honors College.
The Honors College.
At Purdue University.
Took the
for
test.
For the teaching program.
Exactly.
Took the test, and none of them passed.
Mm.
And so what came out of that? Now they're saying that you don't have to take that test anymore because there is a shortage of teachers.
Mm.
And so they have removed this test.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that this test removed, anyone that Mr. Simmons spoke about, mainly the young white teachers who have no connection with the clients that they're serving in the classroom, mm-hmm. they're the ones who are really going to benefit from this because mm-hmm. there was a teacher shortage and they had to figure out a way to help teachers get in the classroom.
Mm. So I'm clear. It's not so much that we're saying that a white teacher can't teach a black student. We're saying that the training, there's a necessary training that's missing.
Absolutely.
There's yes. a necessary, you know, there's a missing step, a cultural yes. competency step
Absolutely.
In many schools
yes,
to help that it makes that is necessary because if you're going to teach in an urban setting that is different than possibly your upbringing, then you have to have something either in your teaching education background or beyond your teaching background to help you function or perform well in the job you decided to take.
That's right. Because
just being trained as an educator, there's another dynamic going on in that room, and it's how African Americans have been trained within our culture, as you're saying, to read not just what you say, but how you treat us.
That's right.
Or what you infer by your actions. And that's huge. I don't see a lot. I know of a school, Elder Diggs Academy, that's doing some cultural competency training as an add-in to the curriculum for their students.
Oh, that's huge.
What if we could push that along? What kind of impact might that make?
That would make a huge impact. But let's help the audience have an example of what okay. we're talking about.
Please
when
do.
We talk about culture, climate, and control.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's something that I do. I go and talk to teachers and people about that. And so our kids are taught to read body language.
Right.
Because our kids live in some of the most dangerous neighborhoods,
sure.
some of the most adverse situations. They're taught to read body language.
Right. And observe everything.
And observe yeah. everything.
That's right.
And so if you miss somebody's body language, it could cost you your life in
sure.
today's world.
Absolutely.
And so when our kids go into the classroom, especially African-American children, mm-hmm. they are reading the teacher's body language. And the teacher may not know. And the teacher may not be giving, may not have no ill will.
Which is instinctive to the human experience. It's not just a black thing.
It's not just a black thing.
It's a black thing. When you walk as creatures of that have a relationship with environment and atmosphere, what you don't understand, you find another way to try to understand, and mm-hmm. that's body language. What is my surroundings saying to me?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And yeah. so the teacher could be frustrated with the class before,
mm-hmm.
and she's standing in the hallway greeting her students, but her body language doesn't give off a greeting mindset. And so our kids pick up on that. And so before he even crossed that line to go in the classroom, there is a mental battle going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already being defeated because of the body language that was given off. He feels as though the teacher's going to come at him, as they say. And then thus we have a battle. Mm-hmm. And when the battle begins, the only recourse is to send him out of the classroom. And thus he
Pull
misses
him out of education.
He misses the opportunity to learn.
He's out of the learning environment. Yeah.
Right.
Which is what I talk about the SPED, which is why I took my current job, because a lot of the guys, the young men that I was dealing with in SPED, were going to the streets.
Before you go there, Mr. Mm-hmm. Couture, I want to go back to a conversation that you and I had when we were introduced. And you talked about how detrimental the suspension rate and suspension as an initial response to aggressive behavior, that which is considered aggressive behavior, how detrimental that can be. Talk to the audience a little bit about how these suspensions play into a narrative about African-American males and steal their opportunity for education.
Well, when you take a young man who's already frustrated
mm-hmm.
because of the night before, we have no clue what happened
right.
the night before in his neighborhood
and what
he went
disposition.
To. That's right.
Yeah.
And so he goes to school and he's frustrated. You know, because one, he's not competing in the classroom. One.
Right. Right.
And secondly, he's have to battle for his life, in a sense, when he leaves the classroom. And so he goes to a place, the one place that he feels that can make him better.
Mm-hmm.
But he's struggling there. And so they put him out because of those struggles.
And you're bringing up so many different things as to why some of our young males are frustrated.
That's right.
Because if I've committed to the notion, as an African young male, that I do need an education, and then having committed to it, you're not giving me a chance, and that's another impetus to make me want to quit.
That's right.
which is where which where the anger comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you kick a young
man, always connected to fear.
Which always connected to fear.
Right.
Sure.
And so when you kick this young man out of school, and it's unfortunate that we have this, these situations, but he has tried and tested his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so mom has decided, I've done everything I can to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you're kicked out of school, you're not going to lay at my house mm-hmm. all day long.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when I leave for work, you've been acting grown. You've been acting like you know how to fend for yourself. You got to get up out of here.
Yet he's still a child.
Yet he's still a child. Mm-hmm. So when you get with another group of individuals who have been kicked out of school mm-hmm. in the same neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
they have no monies. Their thought process is not developed. It becomes a survival
wow.
mechanism.
Wow.
And so when you survive, when you're in a survival mechanism mode, you become animalistic.
You revert to your lower.
You revert to your lower self. And so right. when yeah. you get a group of them together and they're acting out in the neighborhood and we got shootings and everything, when you look at it, man, this kid should have been in school. And when you find out why he wasn't in school, the downfall was because he was kicked out. Mm-hmm. He was suspended.
Let me ask you something. You are bringing some powerful truths to the forefront.
Yes,
here.
You are.
I want you to take a moment, if you will, just you know, kind of discuss with us what are some alternatives. Because and let me set up my question a mm-hmm. little more. Because moving away from some of the rudimentary reasons why we have behavioral issues in our African American males, mm-hmm. let's assume. There are varied reasons.
Okay.
Let's move over here to now there is a disciplinary action required. What are some alternatives that you think would be more beneficial to the overall learning and perpetuating the notion of we're educating this child? What are some disciplinary actions that alternatives to suspension that you think might help them continue that education, keep them out of later frustrating scenarios that they're not prepared for? That are not suspension?
Well, the first thing that we must understand is that these set of kids learn differently.
Okay.
And so when kids learn differently, especially African-American males, there's a program called...
When you say these kids, you mean...
African-American males, our children.
The African-American male.
The African-American male.
Okay.
Because those are the ones that I have found that have been troubled and struggling in a sense.
Mm-hmm. We accept the fact that there's some things that led to that.
Yes, sir. Okay? We understand.
Unbeknownst to them sometime and not of their own doing.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And the institution of racism has produced it more often than not. A mindset.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so one of the things that I believe is allowing them to have a study table instead of kicking them out.
Instead of suspension. Okay.
Allow a study table. Because in that study table, it's going to allow me to teach you on your pace. And when you're allowed to learn on your pace, mm-hmm. your confidence is building. And so that's the first thing we must do. We must build confident boosters within necessary programs in order to keep suspensions from happening.
Have you implemented that in your line of, in your, what you do with the program you work with? Have you implemented any of those procedures? Do you try to go by any principles that you implement that do that?
The only principle that has taken flight of this mm-hmm. is the principal in Evansville.
Okay.
And he understood that, okay, they learn different. African-American males learn different. And so if it gets to the point where they're about to be suspended, he sends them to a study table.
Why? Look, there's just so much here. Why do you think, you have mentioned this more than once, and I believe it's true, and I have notions based on research as to why African American. Mm-hmm. My dissertation work is with African American males, mm-hmm. education, things like that. But why do you think, in your experience, because you are pragmatically functioning within some of these notions?
Yes, sir.
Why do you think the African American male youth learns differently? What are the factors that you believe make that true?
It's real simple, and I don't mean to be rude. But we're dealing with high school GED parents, dropout high school parents who have either dropped out of school or went through the GED.
Often.
Mm-hmm. Often.
Mm-hmm.
And young Mikey found out early that when he took his math homework home, mother wasn't able to help him too much.
So in these situations where you in these some of the special education students you're dealing with, that's the scenario.
That's the scenario.
That's the scenario. Has greatly contributed to the fact that they learn differently. And I don't want to say learning disability.
No,
I want to say they learn differently.
Learn differently.
Absolutely.
Right?
Cause as a pastor, I don't want to switch to from sociologist to theologian so easily or quickly. But as a pastor, I cannot teach all my people the exact same way.
That's no, right. sir.
Yeah, I cannot teach 300 people the exact same way. And I have learned that in 30 years of pastoring.
Folks learn differently.
Absolutely.
And so it happens early. Mother can't help him with his homework, but here's what happens.
Okay.
And this is where we give young males ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad ammunition, but it's ammunition. Mother can't help him. But as soon as he comes home and says, teacher looked at me crazy at school,
mm-hmm.
teacher says something to me off the cuff, mother will run to that school.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Without really investigating, without any taking an interest, but just on the word of young man, said teacher looked at him crazy.
Mm.
Oh, he done found out that if I go home and tell mother that the teachers are messing with me, that's how I'm going to get her involved in my education.
Oh, man.
And it's a bad metaphor. It's a bad combination. Because what is it? It's hostile and emotion. And we know that we have a lot of emotional young brothers mm-hmm. in the world today.
Which drives them instead
which
of...
Which drives them.
Right.
That's a good point.
Brothers, listen, I'm going to have to bring you back.
Yes, sir.
We're going to have to have a part two to this particular show. Mr. Simmons, kind of wrap us up today. Tell me what your thoughts are. As we got about 2 minutes less, and I want you to kind of... It's a whole lot to unpack, sure. But kind of wrap us up today and tell me what your thoughts are about.
Well,
your guest,
my guest is on point.
Yeah,
I've worked with him for many years, mm-hmm. and to piggyback off what he was saying, our children learn differently, and in terms of discipline, that's my forte. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of kicking them out sometime, let's have in-school suspension.
Right,
where they can get their lessons, they can be tutored in-school suspension. And even on the weekends mm-hmm. at Phelan Leadership Academy, we will have young men or young women that have acted out during the week come in on the weekend and do work around the school.
It's amazing to me how much we have to do to combat the effects of racism.
Man.
On a child. Listen, we're going to come back. I'm going to have you guys back. I thank you. Thank you for a tremendous.
Thank you, Doc.
Thank
I appreciate
you for the information.
It. Yes,
you're going to get a chance.
Yes, sir.
Get a chance to explain that a little bit better. Listen, this has been Moves That Matter. As you can tell, we are serious about this. We're not just brothers just up here throwing blows. We are giving information that if we will listen, can help change our African-American youth, change their mindset, and help us fight the effects of racism and situations they've been placed in early in life. I am your host, Dr. Clive Posley. Listen, I believe I'm a logical choice for straight talk about God and society. I want you to tune in next week, and we're going to continue this conversation. I'm glad to have these guests. Finally, let me tell you this. In life, you are constantly making moves, using your will, making choices. Why don't you choose to make your moves, moves that matter? I will see you next week. God bless you. Hope to see you soon.